Want to advertise your business in a cost-effective way? It's time to give podcast advertising a try. Research shows a high rate of podcast listeners made a purchase as a result of an ad they heard on a podcast. Visit podbean.com/brands to launch a cost-effective podcast advertising campaign in minutes. That's podbean.com/brands.
Welcome to Yolitics, the home of cold beer and hot takes on Texas politics.
So this is a very special episode. We haven't done this in a long time.
More than a year.
The last time we did it, we were outside and there was this, you know, talk about a pandemic coming up. We talked to Clay Jenkins, the county judge in Dallas County.
We had no idea what to expect.
No,
there were a few cases.
Yeah, we compared it to Ebola. Hey, how will you take the lessons from Ebola and apply it to this? Not even close.
It seems like a lifetime ago when we think about that. And that was in downtown Dallas. And that's the last time that we were together. And here we are again in downtown Dallas, more than a year later. And this is our first time out and about actually seeing each other and being together.
And Wheeler wanted to get together. I'd prefer to do this at home in my shorts and just sitting around the house doing the Zoom. But Wheeler convinced me to come down here. But nevertheless, we are at one of the coolest places in downtown. I've driven by this building for years and saw it. It's this cool, you know, mid-century architecture. Never really knew what it was. It sat vacant for a long time.
It seems like it was being remodeled forever.
Yeah.
And you wondered, what's going on in there? Well, it changed hands a few times and some different projects were underway. And then you walk in here now and they've given us the nickel tour. And it is jaw-dropping what they've been able to do inside here. And you think, I never knew that was sitting under our noses here in downtown Dallas.
The building is called the National. There's a hotel in here. It's called Thompson Dallas, 220 room hotel. Here's what I didn't know about this until a few moments ago when we got this quick tour. When this building opened in 1965 at the corner of Main and Akron, I believe is where we are.
Mm-hmm.
When this opened in 1965.
Elm and Akron.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm getting
Elm
a nod.
Maine?
I'm getting a
All
nod
right,
that
good.
Says yes. Elm and Akron.
We're on Elm Street. Not
or as
too,
they say in Dallas, Elm.
Elm. Not deep, just
Elm.
Yeah, just regular. But when this opened in 1965, it was the tallest building west of the Mississippi, which is phenomenal. And it sat vacant for 10 years. Bank of America was here. They moved out in 2010. And this has become the largest preservation project in the state of Texas. And this thing is incredible. This building is. And we are in what I think, I don't get out a lot, but this is probably the coolest place I've been to in a long time. The Catbird.
Yes, it is.
On the ninth floor.
It is beautiful inside. And if you do make your way down here, you've got to go in and check out the bar. Just the surface of the bar. I haven't seen anything like it. It's like geodes that are all lit up and it makes up the entire surface of the bar. And it is just stunning. It's so unique. Totally one of a kind.
You went straight to the bar. I haven't looked
at it yet. I went straight to the bar. I think that the GM was still talking. He was like mid sentence and I just like made a beeline to the bar and
All right. So
started talking to you instead.
We're talking about the place we're at. We have Zach from the Catbird here and these guys have been great and brought us a bucket of different local craft beer here that we're going to share in just a moment. I have dry mouth, so I'm going to let Zach come here. I'm going to share my mic here. Tell us what we have here.
All right, we've got a couple of selections of local beers here. Let's go ahead and start off with the beers. We've got the Revolver Blood and Honey.
Nice.
Revolver here in Granbury, I believe. It's absolutely delicious. A little bit of blood orange in there, a little bit of local honey. Can't go wrong. It is a little bit higher ABV, so...
Okay.
Be careful, y'all.
Take it easy.
Exactly.
Govern yourself accordingly.
Then we also have the Texas Blonde from Wild Acre out in Fort Worth. Really nice, refreshing beer. Patio Pounder. You can get these out at the swimming pool all the time. I will give this to you.
That is a good pop of the top there, too.
I do my best, y'all.
A patio Pounder.
For the last one, we also have a non-alcoholic beer. This is from Athletic Brewing.
You can put that one back.
Okay, I'll go ahead and put this back in there. But it's from San Diego. You don't have to worry about it,
y'all. We'll look at it.
And then we do have a couple of other non-beer options for people that don't necessarily like it.
Right.
One of my favorites in Bishop Ciders out in Austin. This is the apple pineapple.
Oh, nice.
Once again, really nice patio pounder. Get this out by the pool.
Good
absolutely
summer.
Delicious.
Yeah, good summer drink.
Would you want me to pop this one as well, or are we waiting?
Don't open them all just yet.
All right,
open one for our guest in a moment. What's this red one here, though?
Okay, this is one of the newer ones we just got. This is also from Austin Company. This is a Paloma. Huh. So are you guys familiar with Paloma Cocktail?
I am not.
I have no idea.
wonderful classic cocktail, fresh grapefruit, a little bit of lime, and tequila. So
tequila,
get the
okay.
same thing. It should be a Jalisco tequila in here, and also really, really tasty, very refreshing, and one of my favorites as well. I do like grapefruit.
I'll take that one to go. I can do that for you. Awesome, Zach.
With
thanks
a crazy
so much,
straw.
Man. I appreciate y'all. Enjoy yourself.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You. Thank welcome. You for having us, too.
So our guest today, we're going to let her pick her. She has her own private bucket over here.
Oh, she has her own bucket.
So she can take whatever she wants. Courtney Garrett, she's the president of Downtown Dallas, Inc., and your offices are here in this building, too. So when we set this thing up, I just thought we were going to a very cool latest preservation project, this cool building downtown. I didn't realize you're here all the time.
I am. Lucky girl, I am.
Yeah, indeed so.
The DDI World Headquarters moved in here in December.
The global headquarters. Welcome to Yolitics. You are our first guest in
person.
A year and a half. Yeah.
I know. We may have some treats to celebrate that later, but I'll tease that.
I told Scott Goldstein from your staff, I want that app on my phone where I can change the Bank of America tower colors. How can I get that? Can you set me up with that?
Absolutely.
Good.
You
all
have
right.
the power to do that,
Good.
Don't you?
Oh, we control a lot of lights.
Awesome.
You know, I love that we are connecting with you in this building, though, because this is what it has become all about, not just in Dallas, but, you know, you go to Houston, San Antonio, Austin. Everybody's trying to do this where you create a community in place, a vertical community. In this building, we've got this great place where we are right now, Catbird. You have residences in this building. You have a hotel in this building. You have retail in this building. You have your offices in this building. And this is really the way that downtowns get revitalized, because you've got what you need in place and you don't feel like you're in a desert for one thing or the other.
Absolutely. I mean, this building, I think, represents all of downtown's revitalization, because that's truly what we've done over the last 25 years with reinvestment, is create the density in a place where you can do all. And it's a place for all where you can do all. And we talked a little bit in some of the lead up about building complete neighborhoods and the importance of connecting housing to jobs, to services and amenities. And this building is doing it right here. But then you walk out the front door and you have a whole host of other things you can do and see and be a part of. So it's really incredible. This building is also the last vacant building to be done out of 40 vacant buildings that downtown were here in downtown just, again, 20 years ago. This is a momentous occasion for this building to be here and for you all to be here for your first in-person show.
So, yeah, back that up. So there were 40 vacant buildings, and now they've all been redone?
Absolutely. 1996, we had 40 vacant buildings.
That is stunning.
And
we
now sit with zero.
That is impressive.
Really incredible.
There's the headline right there. That is great.
So that leads me right into asking about this, because we're, you know, coming off of the worst of the pandemic now. And we know that that has been difficult for office space. You know, a lot of companies rethinking things. We know that people have been rethinking how they live, where they live, and so forth. We know that this has been really hard on a lot of small businesses in particular. What has the toll been like down here when you got to the worst of it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I have to tell you, the most surreal moment was in that probably first 2 or 3 days of the mandated shutdown, when we literally saw 135,000 office workers leaving their offices. People were walking down the street with their monitors. And you understood at that moment what truly this impact could potentially be. Now, fortunately, we've had 12,000 residents move into downtown over that same period of time, revitalization investment. So we have a neighborhood here. So, of course, the residents stayed, but you still had, I mean, you think about your daytime population decreasing from 135,000 to at best maybe 2 or 3% of that in the very beginning to just your residents. It was a really big moment for us all to realize we need to be prepared. So I think the first couple of months really were in this, we don't know what to expect mode, but we as an organization, I'm really proud. We are an essential service. We have a clean team and a security team who are out on the street 7 days a week. They never stopped. And our team quickly mobilized to look at what could the potential impact of this be and what do we need to do to support the community. And fortunately, we went into the pandemic in such a strong position. Over $11 billion invested in the revitalization of downtown leading into that. $4 billion of projects that were under construction March 12th, 2020.
$4 billion.
$4 billion.
Wow.
And at that very first moment, we didn't know what was going to happen to those projects. Now, fast forward 60, 90 days, and now where we are today, none of those projects have been derailed.
Awesome.
Huge positive indicator. We're seeing the interest from both coasts and the stress in other markets. We just had the news of the Integrity Marketing Group lease at Fountain Place, 100,000 square feet, one of the largest recent leases in downtown. So the positive indicators are coming back. But I will tell you, those first few days leading into the first 60, 90, we didn't know what to expect.
It was a scary time.
Yeah. I bet you were. Yeah. We work downtown.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we haven't been, we're told to come back to work soon.
Well, wait, I've been doing it all along. I've still been driving down to work every day, and even during the pandemic. And I will say that I can only imagine what it must be like if you are heading up a place called Downtown Dallas, Inc.
Right.
Because there were a lot of days that in the middle of my work day, I could strap on some rollerblades, get on a bike, and I could just go down Main Street. I mean, there was nobody.
Right.
And I can only imagine what that must have felt like. And that's extraordinary that none of the construction projects went away. In fact, you all didn't, like, you know, just, you know, sit on your laurels last year and kind of wait to see how we came out of this. Didn't you all get kind of aggressive in going after companies like relocations?
We absolutely did. I mean, we mobilized a recovery plan very quickly. Again, within the first 90 days, we retooled our entire team, and you were either on crisis management and communications because we run all the emergency networks for downtown, or you were on the recovery team. So we've doubled down on our marketing nationally to tell the Downtown Dallas story and work with these companies and investors who are interested in coming in. Right now, we have more out-of-market development interest than I've seen. I've been with DDI for 19 years, probably more than I've ever seen. So we have been very aggressive in that, and also aggressive in our hospitality marketing. Obviously, as you said, the small business and the hospitality industries have been affected the most. So we have doubled down on staycation marketing, on drive time travel to help support these small businesses and our hotels. Fortunately, we're seeing convention business go up. We're seeing our restaurants coming back. We actually opened more restaurants last year than closed.
Huh.
And we certainly, I mean, we miss and hope that those that closed will end up coming back, but we've had a pretty positive, you know, I call Dallas the slow and steady market. Slow and steady wins the race, right? So we don't have the peaks and valleys that the other coasts do, but we certainly are able to weather these storms in a much more positive and sustainable way.
Courtney, where's the interest from? What East Coast, West Coast, everywhere?
Primarily, I would say West Coast. We are seeing some East Coast, a little bit coming out of Chicago. But really, I mean, it's pretty intuitive. And frankly, it's what was happening pre-pandemic. The pandemic has just put a big magnifying glass on it. Those stressors where you have high taxes, highly regulated markets. Now, all of a sudden, those businesses are waking up and saying, gosh, we can go into a place that is more business friendly, more cost effective. And because of the development improvements that have been made over the last decade or so, particularly in downtown, it's a great quality of life.
Mm-hmm. So are
the
these,
arts, the culture, the urbanism.
And parks now.
Parks.
Yeah,
exactly.
I want to get into that in a moment. Are these expansions or are these moves?
Mostly moves. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing mostly moves. Pre-pandemic, I would have said it was expansions, kind of testing, dipping your toe in the market.
Yeah.
But now we're seeing full relocations. And with Integrity, I mean, I won't call Cypress Waters a suburb because we are friends with our friends in Cyprus. But certainly we are seeing some coming in from the suburbs too. So I think that, you know, you hear a lot of folklore in the market saying, well, part of the pandemic impact is going to be people are fleeing from downtowns because you're close and you're dense and now we want to move back out. In reality, we're not seeing that.
That was the narrative.
That was the narrative. It was.
And not only that, it was, you know, sort of the death knell. You know, commercial office space is going down. It's going to take it a long time to come back. That's not the story that you're seeing though.
That is not the story, particularly that we're seeing here. And I think that's because we've so consciously diversified the downtown market as well. So the crash in the 80s, that was really the huge impact that just forced everything to vacate downtown. We were primarily finance and energy driven.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since the revitalization, we now see so many creative services. Our industries are broad. We have a lot more innovation, a lot more tech.
Mm-hmm.
So we are more fortunate than some of our other Texas City friends who are still very one or two dimensional in their markets.
Like
Houston.
Yeah, Houston. H-Town.
Oil's still king, isn't it?
Oil and energy. I mean, we still have a lot of those traditional industries here too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But we're in a much better place to be able to weather these storms with the diverse market that we have.
Courtney, zoom out for us. Give us an idea of what downtown Dallas is like, number of residents, number of hotels, et cetera, because everyone sees a skyline, they drive around it, they might drive into it and do something if they don't live here. But this is its own city inside of itself, too.
It is. And let's first talk about what downtown is, because I think the geographic differences are one that a lot of people, depending on your perspective, have differing views, right? So downtown, as we define it, is the central business district or kind of within the freeway loop. That being said, we are also very cognizant of what, you know, terminology is terminology, but we call it the city center. So kind of that greater 2.5 mile radius around. That includes Uptown and Deep Ellum and the Cedars and Southside and the Trinity and
Harwood.
Portions of West Dallas and Harwood and Victory Park, Northern Oak Cliff, because freeways shouldn't be what divide us, right? I mean, I'm not going to argue with you if you're a tenant going in on Ross Avenue or a tenant going in just north of Clyde Warren Park. It's all part of that greater whole, particularly as we're talking economic development outside of this market. So that being said, I'll kind of give you the stats in two different ways. So within the downtown core, we have 12,000 residents. Within that greater area, there are 75,000. Now, coming back to the downtown area, 96, which is kind of a benchmark for us because that's when reinvestment really started happening in a concerted way, 200 residents in downtown. So 200 residents.
Wait, in 1996, there were 200 people that lived here?
One building.
That's unreal.
In Dallas, Texas.
In Dallas, Texas.
What a change in not that long of a period.
It's really true. And in our history, Dallas has not been a city with a significant downtown residential population, even in the heyday. Even in the 50s, when you had Theater Row and bustling retail districts, we just traditionally aren't a very dense city. So that change, that 200 to 12,000 has been significant. We have another 3,000 units that are under construction. All of our buildings are 90% plus occupied. We are seeing rents going up, which opens up another challenge with workforce housing that I'm sure we can talk about later. But all of those positive signs that there's still, because that's a question I get a lot, is there too much supply coming into the market? And we're just not seeing it. Our occupancy rates are so high. 27 hotels. We opened a hotel that right here at the Thompson in 2020. We also broke ground on a hotel in 2020, the JW Marriott. So again, when you look at Dallas versus some other markets, the fact that even with the strained hospitality industry, we're opening and breaking ground on projects, another really good position for us. As I told you, 135,000 employees, 4,000 employers, and we're seeing companies moving. I mean, announcements are coming almost by the week now, small leases, large leases. So a lot of positivity. Four new parks coming online.
And that's important to the strategic plan you guys have.
Huge.
Incredibly important. So one of the biggest changes, you know, that's one of the other $1 million questions I get a lot. So what's been the biggest change downtown that you've seen? It's truly going from that commercial office center to a neighborhood or a series of neighborhoods. And that adding parks, walkability, livability, amenities, the grocery stores, the farmers market, the things that if you're speaking economically, that companies are looking for because they want happy employees and that we as Dallas residents and downtown residents want to see. It's all those quality of life aspects.
And if you haven't been to the farmers market, by the way, in several years, you must come back down. It's right there behind City Hall in downtown Dallas. And it is a totally remade space. It is a magnet now. You go there on a weekend and that place is hopping.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're seeing 4,000 visitors on the weekends. That was during the pandemic.
Wow.
It's
outdoors.
The farmers market and the AT&T Discovery District have been two of our most successful spaces through 2020 because of that interactivity between outdoor and indoor and the amenities that they've brought because people want to get out.
And people might not know about the AT&T Discovery District. I've driven by, but I haven't stopped there and gotten out with the kids or anything. But AT&T, their global headquarters right here in downtown Dallas, they redid the whole front sidewalk, et cetera.
It's all pedestrian
sidewalk.
In there now.
It's all really cool.
$100 million investment. When they made the decision to not only keep but grow their global headquarters here, they determined that they really wanted to have what you would think of, you know, in the traditional New York. What would a big company like AT&T do in an urban environment? if you would have driven down Commerce Street prior to their renovations, most people probably didn't even realize, unless you look up at the building, that AT&T's global headquarters was there. $100 million investment, turned the whole project inside out. Restaurants, performance space, the big media wall. I'll tell you, one of this is my little tidbit for Dallasites to do when you want to get back downtown. Come to the National, walk out of the front door of the Thompson Hotel, turn right on Ackard and look down that corridor because you see the AT&T media wall. Mm-hmm. You'll feel like you're transported to another city, but it's yours and it's incredible.
I was going to say that, and I didn't want to offend in saying that you do feel like you have walked into another city, like a New York City. And it really is about, isn't it, learning what works in other places and taking components of that and creating it here. Because, you know, New York City for a long time has had a lot of residents downtown. It's had a lot of tourists downtown. We're now experiencing that here, and you can sort of pick and choose what you want to put in.
Absolutely. I mean, you want to take the best of the best, but you want to do it in a way. Dallas is different. We're in a central location, and you go through all those reasons, you know, no geographic things to write home about. You know,
it's and prairie land.
You're right. And a much newer city. That's one of the things that I point to a lot with people. Why has it taken downtown so long to come around? Well, as a city, we're so much younger than New York and Boston and some of the more established urban cities that you think about. So we're coming into our own now. And, you know, again, we had hit such an amazing stride pre-COVID, and now magnifying glass is on us. And I think that's just going to really start to skyrocket.
So let's talk about mobility as well, too. There was talk a little while ago about putting an underground rail station in over in front of City Hall towards Farmers Market. Then there's talk about tearing down the elevated freeway I-345 that separates the CBD, Central Business District, and Deep Ellum. There's talk about the high-speed rail train. I just saw they reached another milestone today as, you know, as we record this. But when is this stuff going to happen? Is it going to happen? Is there going to be more light rail downtown? Is this elevated freeway ever going to go down? And if it does, what happens to the traffic?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I take it every so often.
Well, urban planning, again, I go back to the adage, slow and steady. You know, when you're dealing with the complexities of an urban environment, it's not as easy as building a new project up in Frisco, for example, right? So these projects do take a while. But I will tell you, we're in advanced planning stages on a lot of mobility improvements that are going to be transformational. Regionally, the DART second alignment that you mentioned, DART is building a second alignment of light rail through downtown, the majority of which will be a subway. So we'll see that coming. DART is working with the feds right now to put a grant application into the FTA.
It's a good time for that.
So we're seeing that move forward. I know.
As they start talking about infrastructure here.
You are absolutely right. Between infrastructure dollars coming out, as well as just a new philosophy in the administration to be able to award projects. We've been on hold for a little while, so that's coming back. We also are working very closely with TxDOT and the North Central Texas Council of Governments on I-345 and addressing that barrier between the Farmers Market and Deep Ellum, or downtown and Deep Ellum. There's some public meetings coming up for that project, actually, as they're moving forward with their studies to look at exactly how that elevated freeway is addressed. With I-30, we're really excited about some of those improvements because I-30, the canyon in particular, has been such a barrier to the south. Mm-hmm. And we see the tremendous potential. Some of our greatest development opportunity is south of City Hall.
Yeah.
And then you move over into the Cedars, where you see the connectivity and what Matthews Southwest has developed with Southside and how that's bleeding over into the east side of the Cedars. So addressing I-30, and we're exploring potential decking of I-30.
Really?
Not necessarily replicating Clyde Warren Park, but similar to what's been done in the Southern Gateway. We're looking at what is the right way to address that so that we're not just improving a freeway, a canyon freeway, that we're really looking on how to connect those neighborhoods.
That would open up the entire south, you know, southern part of the skyline area.
Absolutely. So we're working really closely with the COG on that, looking at, can we build buildings on top of that? Where does it make sense? Fun tidbit. So Dallas Heritage Village, Dallas's old city park, right? The original city park. We can bridge over I-30 to the east there and almost completely recreate the original historic footprint of Dallas's City Park.
Huh. Wow.
That is incredibly exciting. And that was in one of our first versions of the 360 plan. And we're now planning toward that today. So, like I said, a lot of really exciting projects when it comes to that mobility.
How confident are you these things are going to happen? I-345 doing something with I-30, the canyon there.
Subway.
How confident are you?
A subway.
Yeah.
very confident they will all happen. It's a matter of when. I do think the time is right. Again, we point to the opportunities of the federal government for infrastructure dollars. Yeah. The planning, I think what positions us so well now is the majority of the planning's been done. So we're in, you know, call it shovel ready, call it near shovel ready.
That's a big part of it when you start asking for money.
And political will is there. You have a consensus with political will that understands connectivity from TxDOT to the COG down to City Hall. And then what we've been driving for so long, the thoughts of connectivity and connecting neighborhoods and bringing all of this together are now more mainstream versus just this urban pioneering spirit.
And the COG is the North Central Texas Council of Governments. In case people hear COG, they don't know what it is. And it's representatives from every city in North Texas and county. Is that right?
Right, right. And they're essentially the conduit to a lot of the federal funding that's coming out. And they work closely between the state and the feds. They're kind of that conglomeration of the municipalities in different regions. So the North Texas Central Council of Governments is ours.
So that handles, you know, how we're going to get around in cars and subways and trains and so forth. And I know that you can't promise me that I'm going to get my streets back to be able to just get on my bike or my rollerblades and just take over like Main Street like I could in the middle of the pandemic. But how much are you focusing in on that part of the commute? You know, people being able to just get around on foot, on bike, on you know, rollerblades.
No one rollerblades.
They'll come back. If you build it, they will come. And then also scooters, which we don't see littering the sidewalks here like we did. I mean, they exploded overnight. They were all over the place and then they were just kind of gone.
Yeah,
so can you kind of bring us up to speed on
all
that?
Sure. Well, first, I'm glad you brought up the walkability and the micromobility and the block by block focus, because at the same time we're focused on these big regional projects, it is absolutely critical that we're paying attention to the local network. I'm a walker. That's been my passion in this job from day one. And that's what I love about cities, is the ability to walk from block to block and discover new things, and you feel the energy. So as we look at some of those initiatives, one, we have a pedestrian master plan, which I know sounds really exciting, but for those of us who are urban planning wonks, it is very exciting because we're looking at what those paths are to be able to walk from block to block and how we activate each storefront and where do we need to improve landscaping and shade
and lighting.
And lighting. Yeah, exactly.
What does that mean? You mean activate storefronts and stuff like that?
That you have a contiguous, you have a constant experience. Mm-hmm. Why will you walk 30, 45 minutes in New York and not even notice it because there's something happening every step of the way. And that's been one of our challenges here. As we've developed in nodes. So the farmers market, Main Street, the arts district. Now we need to fill in those gaps because truly you can walk from the farmers market to the arts district in 9 minutes at a leisurely pace. I used to do it with my double stroller and my twins all the time. But people don't do it because you're walking past vacant parking lots and empty storefronts. So that ground plane activation is our term, and just bringing that walking experience life.
This is like the Netflix of city planning. You don't give people any chance to get bored. Immediately, the next program starts.
100%.
You have to make it stop if you want it to stop. So that's what you're trying to do, is to keep them so engaged that they don't even realize that, oh my God, we've been walking for an hour.
100%. And bikes obviously play a huge role in that. We just should go check out, if you haven't seen it already, Bike Harwood is a project that we opened during pandemic, and it will eventually connect all the way from Dallas Heritage Village to Clyde Warren Park. Right now we have our first phase, which is Dallas Heritage Village to Main Street Garden, and it's a bike lane. It's a multi-use lane painted green so you can see it with barriers. We slowed traffic down so we can start to make those connections, and building more bike lanes is a big priority for us, and we push that a lot at City Hall. Scooters.
Are we going to see the swarms return?
Yeah. I think we will ultimately see scooters come back, but in a much more responsible way. I will tell you, we're highly supportive of scooters. What we see in terms of their ability to connect last mile, which is, you know, when you're taking the DART train in, for example, and then trying to get to your office.
Yeah.
Or for those who live and work in downtown where it's somewhere either you're running late and you can't walk, or you just don't want to quite go that far. Scooters are a great resource. My husband, again, we were in our townhouse. He used to grab a scooter and run over to Royal Blue all the time, farmers market to Main Street. So we will see them come back, but obviously they entered the market in an unregulated way.
Yeah.
And we learned a lot of lessons. And then when the pandemic hit, we saw a lot of unsafe use. Mm-hmm. So that's why you saw the dramatic takeout of that transportation mode. But we're working on getting them back. We're working with City Hall, bringing regulations.
They're fast and they're fun. They are. I mean, Taylor, didn't we go to lunch that way one day? And it was, I told our producer, Taylor, here, that's the most fun I think I've had all week, which is a really sad commentary on my life, number one. But number two, it really is, it's a different way to get around, and it makes you feel like a kid again. But we just have to have the rules first this time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like I said, I'm much more of a walker, simply because I walk around in heels a lot, and I'm always afraid I'm going to crash a scooter and then become a headline. But
for all the wrong
reasons.
On the
weekends and things, when I've got the tennies on, yeah, we'll definitely hop on those scooters.
So after 19 years at downtown Dallas, Courtney, how many rollerbladers do you think you've seen in 2 decades in downtown?
You've seen them, haven't
One.
You?
And it's
no.
probably Wheeler
and
when
it's
he's
Jason.
Off.
Uh-huh,
yeah, it's probably
uh-huh.
Jason when he's off. But seriously, let me ask you.
Hey, they come out at night, by the way. There
yeah,
is
of course
a group.
They do.
There is a whole group that does that at night. They skate at night. And they come down.
I have seen them at Victory Park. There's like 6 or 7 of them.
Oh, no, there's dozens.
All right. Oh. They're like the Chupacabra, too. Courtney, let me ask you about parks, because Dallas is not really known for its parks. The Clyde Warren Park is this cool landmark over here. I think of the Triple Underpass area there, a lot of green space there. But there are 4 new parks opening in downtown Dallas, and one of them is an old parking lot, which is cool. It's being changed out behind the Sheraton Hotel.
Yeah,
in downtown Dallas. But 4 new parks coming online?
Yeah, parks are an incredibly important part of what has happened and what will happen in downtown. So we worked with the city, created a parks master plan in 2005, and out of that came some of the signature parks that we all know now. Main Street Garden, Belo Garden, Clyde Warren Park was a part of that. The same group, which is now Parks for Downtown Dallas Foundation, mobilized to raise an additional $40 million to invest in these new parks that are coming in. So we opened Pacific Plaza just about a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Behind the Sheraton there, is that the one?
Yeah, yes, that one would be behind.
Okay.
But then there's
the
Carpenter
Sheraton.
Park that's near the Sheraton too.
Okay.
So I think you're talking about that one. So Pacific is open. West End Square just opened about a month and a half ago, which is incredible. It's a smart park and really touts itself.
Park.
It's a smart park.
What is a smart park?
It's got wireless, it's got
Wi-Fi.
Really powerful Wi-Fi and an innovation arcade. They're bringing in a lot of interactive digital art.
Where is this?
And in the West End. So the West End is
I'm
Dallas's,
downtown all the time. I don't know where this is. I
it's
know
right
West
next
End
to where
is.
Spaghetti Warehouse.
Okay.
You've been one of these work-from-home people. You need to refamiliarize yourself with downtown Dallas, Jason.
I'm going to have to go check this out, though. It's called West End Square.
West End Square. Yeah, West End Square. And a lot of these things opened during the pandemic, the Discovery District, this building, West End Square. So we are ready to celebrate. We're ready for everyone to come back down and see these projects because they are incredible. And West End Square sitting in the West End is Dallas's first innovation district. So it's playing off of that theme where we have Blue Cross Blue Shield's Innovation Center, Sam's Club's Innovation Center. So again, one of those quintessential questions about downtown, what's happening with the West End. That's one of the big transformations there is becoming an innovation district. Hmm. So I digress. West End Square, you can wind me up and I will just keep going.
That's like Jason too, so I get it. Yeah, it's okay.
So West End Square, and then we have Carpenter Park under construction now. That will open the spring of 2022. And then Harwood Park near the Farmers Market is the 4th of the parks, and that one will start construction later this year. So really, really incredible.
I want to ask you about something else during the pandemic that really had a spotlight put on it, and that was homelessness. A lot of people, you know, of course, had a lot of trouble with their living arrangements and so forth. And, you know, we have seen the plague of homelessness, especially in places like Austin, which has really had a tough time grappling with the population that they've got there. What's happening with that in Dallas, and is it instructive when you see what's going on in other cities to be able to kind of figure out how to do that?
Right. Well, I will say what are other cities doing right? And I think it's obvious throughout the nation that no one is doing it exactly right.
Right.
I mean, this is an issue that is so complex because you're dealing with mental health, substance abuse, national health care funding, state healthcare funding. I mean, there's so many different ways. So we as an organization, obviously the downtown area, we have the concentration of services And any urban area is going to have, most likely in any city, the concentration of the issue, and those are experiencing homelessness. So our perspective is sort of twofold. One, at a strategic level, we're working with the City of Dallas and their Office of Homeless Solutions, as well as Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance, and several of our service providers throughout the downtown area for some of those greater, longer-term plans, one of which is absolutely housing. Another is more funding for mental health and substance abuse, so more of those policy-type issues. We're also working on the ground every day, and that's where I really carry a lot of pride for our team. We are traditionally a business and community-based organization. We, in 2018, decided to pilot a program because we saw there was a gap. Mm. We did not have people going out into the field in downtown and engaging these individuals on an individual basis to truly understand their challenges. Mm. There's not one solution that fits all. You might meet someone who has a substance abuse issue. You might meet someone who just simply lost their job recently. You might meet someone who's in a mental health crisis. And all of those services, for the most part, are housed within different nonprofits for solutions. Mm-hmm. So we have a relate and refer program. Our outreach case managers go out into the field. They understand these cases and they refer them to the service providers that fit. And we do that in a dual way with public safety. So if there's an issue with an individual that truly is criminal in nature, then we address that through law enforcement. Mm. But if it's someone who is open to social services and has a potential for longer term recovery, then we're able to do that. And I think that's the changing nature of police work. This isn't necessarily a new conversation, mm-hmm. but we're seeing that the old way of doing things is not necessarily working, and we need to have longer term solutions.
Is that working though? Have you guys got any metrics to show that the individual case by case?
Yeah, we are averaging with our outreach just within the last year about 200 engagements per month.
Wow.
And we're seeing anywhere from 8 to 15 placements per week out of those engagements. So
these are people who would otherwise fall through the cracks.
Exactly. Exactly.
You mentioned police work too, and there's a new police chief in town, Chief Eddie Garcia from out in the Bay Area. I'm guilty of reading the Drudge Report every so often. And, you know, Michael Drudge uses the mm-hmm. worst headlines in the world. But he talks about, you know, crime is horrible. Actually, New York Times had an article the other day talking about crime in big cities is bad. So here we are post-pandemic. Cities want to get people back. And you have the crime that's surging in a lot of places. But you guys saw that crime was actually down year to year in 2019 to 2020. Is that right?
In the downtown area, we have seen, I mean, statistically, downtown historically has been one of the safest neighborhoods in Dallas. I think it's density. It's eyes on the street. Mm-hmm. It's just the nature of being right there in the center city. You don't see as much. Now, our issues are perception and more quality of life. So when you talk about vagrancy, panhandling mm-hmm. kind of has its ebbs and flows. So that's where in an urban area, we see more of those challenges. We just had Chief Garcia at our board meeting right before we sat down today.
Yeah. You should have brought him downstairs.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, come on. It was virtual.
We had him in the podcast.
Oh, okay. We're still virtual. but he has some really creative ways and is a big supporter of special initiatives because, again, not one size fits all neighborhoods.
Right.
And that's so true in Dallas. So the issues that we experience downtown are very different, just like every neighborhood in Dallas is different. So he and his command staff are very proactive and really creative in the way that they approach. Street racing is a great example.
Mm.
Obviously, we experienced a challenge with that in downtown as well as other neighborhoods in the city.
It's a big problem.
And he came right into that within his first month. And we saw some particular enforcement initiatives around it that helped.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, I think that a lot of us would assume that there's always a competition between downtown Dallas, downtown Houston, you know, San Antonio, Austin, Fort Worth, whatever it may be.
Is there not?
There is, and obviously there is because you're trying to land, different, big companies and so forth, but you work together too. And as I understand it, you all have been working together with a lot of these other downtown groups across Texas to tackle what you all see as quote unquote anti-city tendencies with the legislature. What does that mean, first of all? And have you been successful in turning some of that back?
Right. Well, we are very collaborative. That's why I kind of shy away talking about any market strains in our friends. In fact, my colleague in downtown Houston is one of my mentors. So we talk as CEOs of major downtown cities on a regular basis. And we started last year, but this year really formalized a legislative agenda for the large Texas urban cities because of that historic challenge of the state government between the rural versus urban caucuses and the policies that come out of that. I will tell you, this legislative session was a challenge to move the needle in a really big way simply because so much of it was dominated by pandemic and some of, you know, the top three issues that were sort of outside of where our interests lie right now.
Mm-hmm.
But where
very,
we
very political way of saying it too.
Yeah, it was. It was,
that was you saw
good.
That dance?
That was
very diplomatic.
Good. Nice. Well done.
Yeah. Different joke there, but I'm just gonna stop.
You can see the edit wheels turning in her head right now.
We'll cut all that out.
I was a number two for a number one for a really long time. So
yes,
I'm watching
understand.
Scott cringe over there.
I know, right?
So I think our goals for this year have really been just to create that presence in Austin. And next year, I think we will really go down there as a consortium and advance more specific legislation. But this year was really about we're here and we want to be heard and we want to advance and make you all understand how much that cities are driving the state.
Yeah, it's the engine. I mean, these are economic engines, huge ones.
Yeah.
It's kind of strange that you would see any pushback against what are the economic engines.
But what do you want? What do you want the legislature to do maybe next session when they come back?
Well, when we look at policies balancing, again, those rural goals with those that are urban, because oftentimes you see those in conflict.
Right.
I think high-speed rail is a great example of one of those,
mm-hmm.
right? So high-speed rail coming in, great for Dallas, great for Houston, and a lot of the opposition coming from the smaller cities in between has really dominated the state rhetoric. So that's seeing those projects
gotcha.
Get more support. Highway funding, transportation funding is another significant one. Rather than just building highways to go through cities, building highways that are gentle on cities and have the type of amenities like deck parks that are more friendly and paying attention to what's happening within the local network versus just getting from city to city to city.
Well, what do you mean gentle on cities? Like Clyde Warren Park over here? I mean,
exactly.
Okay. All right.
Right.
How confident are you that that light rail is going to happen finally?
I think, especially seeing some more good news come out, as you said, just a few moments ago. No, we're confident in it. They have a phenomenal team. They have passed all of the big hurdles at the state over the last few years that they've needed to pass.
And the federal government, too.
And the federal government.
Right.
So I think connecting the Dallas and Houston economies is one of the biggest selling points that both the rail, Texas Central Rail, and those who are involved with it from a development perspective are looking at. It's kind of hard to deny mm-hmm. how important that could be.
There's a reason that big dollars flowed into this project,
exactly.
Private dollars.
Yeah, right. It's all privately funded. I think the big news was the Texas Central Railway, which is the engine behind it, just named a construction company, I believe, is who to go into it. They just signed with WeBuild to serve as the design build lead for this project. So we're waiting to see when that's going to happen. Of course, the pandemic delayed that. Here's my last question for you, Courtney. I lived in a downtown city center on the 14th floor for a long time in another city.
Which city was it?
It was in St. Louis.
St. Louis.
And
we're going to make you name cities, too, like you made her name one earlier.
Hey, you know
what? My friend Maggie Campbell used to run downtown St. Louis.
She?
Yeah.
Well, St. Louis was very different when I was there. So I was there in the 1990s, and the St. Louis Rams were there. They just won the Super Bowl. Mark McGwire was hitting the home run record. So there's a lot of sports going on, but, you know, there was a lot of stuff that they needed to fix. They have since fixed that. Downtown St. Louis is fantastic now. But one thing that I always had an issue with in downtown St. Louis, and it's an issue that I think happens in a lot of major cities, is grocery stores.
Mm.
And I know there's the Walmart just north of the skyline here. There's the Kroger on Haskell.
There's two Tom Thumbs downtown.
There's a Royal Blue and Tom Thumb just open over here by the El Phoenix, by the Perot Science Museum.
Yes.
That's huge. Are there any others coming?
There's another one over by Deep Ellum, or in the east part.
The old, what used to be called the City Lights development.
Yeah,
grocery store's so important.
Yeah.
So I was involved, if you remember, Urban Market, which was our first attempt
by
at a
AT&T.
Grocery store over on
that
Jackson
was,
Street.
I used to go there to eat at night all the time. That place was fantastic.
And that came on, it's a chicken and egg. Mm-hmm. To get a grocery store,
yeah.
you have to have enough residents to support it. But to attract the residents to
support
it, you need the grocery store. Yeah. So Urban Market, I think, was actually a really visionary effort by the developer. The city supported it. We actually raised some additional funds for it because you have to get off the starting line at some point. And so that started the trajectory. I think post maybe 6-8 months from now, I think we were about to have a couple more announcements in the core right before the pandemic happened.
Go ahead and bring
it
early.
You can do it early.
You can bring it early. Politics here.
Nothing signed on the dotted line yet. But
we have more beer. We can crack something.
I know, right? Give me that Paloma.
sometimes that makes the information flow more freely.
That's big news, though. That's encouraging.
It is. It is big news. I mean, and it's coming with the rate that our residential population is growing. But I will say, again, living in the farmer's market for as long as I did, utilizing the farmer's market as our grocery store. Oh. I, even over in Oak Cliff now, I still come to the farmer's market probably once every weekend to pick up some things. So there are plenty between Royal Blue and the farmer's market. Now Tom Thumb at the Union, the Kroger on the east side. It's a much different picture than it was 5-10 years ago.
Yeah, 10 years ago, the Urban Market here. Yeah, no, it's and I loved Urban Market. What happened with Urban Market?
It was simply ahead of its time. Okay. We knew, and the developer knew, and the operator knew. It was a risky venture, and again, we were really trying to answer that chicken and egg.
Great place, though.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to be the tip of the spear, though, and they sort of did that. Yeah. My last question for you is, I know that you all have a lot of things that are working all of the time, and maybe you can't tell us about all of them. But are there some really big relocation / expansions that you're working on right now? Like really big?
I mean, like Amazon or the White House or the,
yes.
What are you thinking, Jason?
Yes.
Are you serious? Like Jason's eyes just opened up.
Yes, there are. And no, I can't talk a lot about them. No, there's the interest again, pre-COVID, because of the national attention that Downtown Dallas received with Amazon HQ2, Uber Move, national spotlight was on us.
Mm-hmm.
So now that companies, I think we had about 6 months where companies were sort of hovering and saying, are we going to come back to the office? What is it going to look like? Do we actually need to move? Now constrained in other markets are saying, we are going to come back. I mean, the predominant, our surveys and anyone we talk to, the predominant thinking is we will be a work from office culture with more flexibility. So you may see some super high tech firms that never come back. We have a couple of smaller ones who aren't, but the majority of companies are coming back and they're saying we need to come back in a place where it's easier to do business and where our employees are going to be happy. And we wholeheartedly believe that that's downtown Dallas. Now, what I can talk about are some really exciting development projects that are going to bring those companies in. Mm. The Dallas Morning News headquarters, old headquarters, and the revamp there.
That's right next to us. What's going on?
Yeah.
What is happening there? We don't know.
So they are building in the Dahl building. They're going to do some event space to feed off of the convention center, and then eventually they'll put a boutique hotel on top of that project.
Wait. The Dahl building. Okay, hold on. Pause here. So George Dahl was a famous architect who did a lot of Fair Park, and he designed the DMN, the Dallas Morning News
building.
Is that there's going to be a hotel on top of the Morning
Eventually,
News?
Eventually, yes. So it's going to start with taking the old Dallas Morning News offices and turning it into really amazing event space. Mm-hmm. The whole project's being done by Ray Washburn and Matthew Southwest, so we know two very quality developers. So it will be driven by that entertainment space. And then, of course, we know Ray for his restaurant businesses for Highland Park Village. So imagine that entire area being transformed into open space, performance space.
Plenty of parking.
Then building hotel, mixed use, residential, additional parking. And that, along with its connectivity across I-30 over into the south side development, if you can picture the geography and the fact that those two teams are teamed up, it's going to be another huge corridor for us with great potential.
When is that going to happen? When is that?
They've already started demolition on the interior of the building. So they're moving forward with it right now. The event space will come first in the Dallas Morning News building. And then over the next 3 years, they'll continue to build out the remainder of the project.
Yeah, I've actually seen people showing up and leaving there. Again, you need to come back to work, yeah. Jason.
If the building's gutted, maybe you can rollerblade inside. Who knows, man? There's a lot of space in there.
Don't tempt me, but it is time for you to put your pants back on and return to work.
And Courtney, your chief of communications and policy is like trying to usher you off the microphone really fast here, so we're probably out of time.
We've probably taken three times the amount of time we told
you. He's like, you shouldn't talk about any of that.
I could sit here. I don't think, I'm like, wait, we haven't talked about Field Street District.
He's telling us you need to edit this out.
Why Scott is hovering
wow
is because we understand this is the 101st episode. We want it to be 100, but we'll take 101.
You know why it's 101? Because their trailer actually is technically number one.
I don't think that was real. So the this trailer, should be
so
the
this
100.
Is 100 technically right here.
And we have a one and a zero and a zero because you
this
brought
is
a lot
coming
of
out of
this is great.
That is
fantastic.
Congratulations,
thank you so much.
And thank you for celebrating the return of the city.
We have cupcakes here. We have cupcakes from a downtown bakery, right?
Yes, from Fluellen's Cupcakes. Right here on Elm Street. They are a phenomenal family-owned business.
Support local.
Yes. And these are tremendous. And
that is awesome.
Very large.
I will have to bike 10 miles tomorrow to work off
one
of these
things.
So I've
had a Texas blonde with a chaser of a cupcake. That is a great afternoon right there.
This is great. We have, this has been fantastic. It's like a 4-hour podcast? How long have we been going here?
Yeah.
This is probably the longest podcast we've ever done. Yeah, this is our producer saying, okay, wrap this thing up.
Courtney, thank you for taking this time with us. I mean, it's stunning how much is happening right underneath us here, and
really
we don't
is.
Really realize it until we have somebody like you on explaining all of it to us. But it matters to all of us.
Courtney Garrett's the president of Downtown Dallas, Inc. We are at Catbird, which is in the National Building on Elm and Ackard.
As they call it here, Elm and Ackard.
Elm and Ackard.
And check out their bar top. It is just amazing.
And if you're here, come look for Zach as well, too. Zach's a good guy. And this place is fantastic. It's the Thompson Dallas Hotel in here. Also, mm-hmm. Downtown Dallas, Inc. is in here. I've learned a lot. I've lived like right next to downtown for 14 years, and there's so much stuff here that I did not know. So, Courtney, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening as well. We will look for you guys again next week. Appreciate you listening for 100 episodes, too. 101
now. Have a cupcake.